This is episode 550 on the Hidden Why podcast with Dr. Pankaj Vidge.
That the purpose of life is to discover your gift, and the meaning of life is in giving it away.
Hey everybody, how the heck are you? I hope you're well. Welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. My name's Lee. Today, guys, I have a cracker of an interview to bring to you with Dr. Pankaj Vidge. He is the author of Turbo Metabolism. He is a doctor of internal medicine, and he has helped thousands of patients lose weight, manage chronic health conditions, and improve their physical fitness. Board certified in internal medicine and obesity medicine, Dr. Vidge has been practicing medicine since 1997, about 20 years. He currently lives in San Francisco. You can also check him out online. I'll stick all the links in the show notes for this episode, episode 550 on the Hidden Why podcast. Be sure to connect with him, connect with me as well. We'd love your comments, so you can leave that at the show notes, or you can reach out to us both directly through the Hidden Why podcast or his website as well. Guys, it's a really cool conversation. We don't just talk about diet or anything that might be quite typical. We go off on tangents down different paths, and I sort of enjoy that. So I hope you do too. Now, we talk about, you know, the epidemic, obesity, and all the related diseases that come with that. So Alzheimer's, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. We look at the causes, you know, the lifestyle choices that we have and that we're surrounded by and how we're influenced. And we talk about, you know, prevention or medication. What's the best alternative? Obviously, or not obviously maybe, but, you know, prevention seems to be the way forward. But that's an interesting part of our conversation as well, just talking about medication and improved levels of technology that we have available to us, and that'll, I assume, increase. So that's a really interesting point of conversation. We talk about the environment, both physical and psychological, and how, you know, we can clean up those environments to really help us transition into a healthier way of life. He certainly links it all back to the why, you know, knowing your hidden why, knowing that motivation, knowing a sense of purpose that you want to live for, and that'll certainly help you proceed forward into a better state of being, I suppose. Now, we do talk about diets, and he sort of gives his opinions on that as well, so check that out. That's towards the end of the chat. I ask him all the typical questions that I ask most guests that come on the show, so really good conversation, guys. I would love to connect with you. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Jump onto thehiddenwhy.com and check it out, episode 550. Leave your comments there and connect with both myself and Dr. Vidge. Let us know what you think. That'd be great. Other than that, enjoy your day, enjoy the show, and we'll speak again soon. Dr. Vidge, welcome to the Hidden Why podcast. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. Whereabouts are you in the world?
I am in the San Francisco Bay Area on the west coast of the United States.
On the west coast, okay. How's the weather?
The weather has been fantastic. We've actually had an early spring. It's nice, been nice and warm already. And yeah, lots of good time to be outdoors, good sunshine. And I understand you're in Australia. Which area of Australia are you in?
Opposite from you, yeah. We are on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia, and it is very warm here. Just had some pretty amazing storms come through last night, which was some of the biggest thunderstorms I've been in for a while, actually.
Wow.
Pretty exciting stuff. But yeah, maybe more today. So at the moment, it's looking quite good, and that should be good for our interview as well. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Okay, well, I grew up in New Delhi, India, yep. Not that far from where you are. And I'm a doctor of internal medicine. I've been in practice for about 20 years, and my main focus is on weight management, obesity, metabolism, and really my passion is in helping people manage and often reverse chronic health conditions and improve their physical fitness. And most recently, I wrote a book about that I'm really, really excited about. And so my passion is in reversing diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and all the other metabolic diseases that are affecting people all over the world.
Yeah, pretty important topic and very relevant to a lot of people, whether themselves or someone they know. It seems to be a global issue. Okay, well done, and congratulations on the book too. So the book is called, I think I've got this right, Turbo Metabolism, 8 Weeks to a New You, Preventing and Reversing Diabetes, Obesity, Heart Disease, and Other Metabolic Diseases by Treating the Causes.
Indeed, that's sort of a long title, but yes, that's it. It covers it all, doesn't it?
Is that the full title? I've just got it in the notes here, and it is quite a lengthy title. It took me a good effort to get that out.
That's a long title. Yeah, I'm from India. We like long names, right? So I made the title really long too.
Okay, nothing to do with New World Library there. I know they're the publishers.
Well, they had something to do with it too. They've been really good. We're actually getting a really good response so far. It's our first week.
Yeah,
and
excellent.
I'm very, very excited to be talking to you.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. Yeah, no, we know the guys there, obviously Kim and Mark as well, both been past guests on the show. Mark's actually been on the show twice, so I really enjoy my conversations with him. But
indeed.
Look, this is about you and your book. And first of all, tell us about, I suppose, why this topic is so important to you.
Well, as a doctor, anybody who's in the health field or cares about health or has someone in their family that has been sick, this should be a critical, crucial, important for all of us, important topic for all of us. As a doctor, day in and day out, all we're doing all day is seeing people with these diseases. It's just four or five conditions that we see people for all day, and they're all related to lifestyle, right? And the approach traditionally has been, hey, these are irreversible conditions. They're chronic. They're progressive. You need to take this medicine, and you need to take more medicine and more medicine and more medicine. And done a good job in educating people about what the cause of the problem is. And until you identify and understand the cause, you can't really treat the problem, can you?
Yeah. So you're talking about like obesity, diabetes, heart disease. Are they the sort of three key ones, or are there more?
Well, obesity and overweight is sort of the underlying common thread for a lot of these, yes, but it's diabetes, it's high blood pressure, it's heart disease, it's strokes. These are the leading killers, and more with Alzheimer's, dementia, and we're learning that that too is an issue with insulin resistance and problems with metabolism and energy delivery, all of which is related to the lifestyle choices that we intentionally or unintentionally make in this modern day civilized living.
So what are the stats currently that you're aware of around, you know, these leading causes? Like, is heart disease still the leading cause of death?
Heart disease and cancer are right tied at number one and number two, just about in every westernized country that you look at. And sadly, even the developing world, as it gets more affluent, the leading causes of death are turning out to be cardiovascular disease and cancer, even in places where, you know, and when they were developing, it was more communicable diseases. And as we get more sanitation and as the rest of the world gets more affluent, it's these two that are the big killers. And without a doubt, no matter where you look in the world, and the causes are so much within our reach that it's sad that so many people are getting disabled and dying every day, every minute. And yet the causes are within our reach to reverse them. Essentially, these diseases don't need to exist if we were making the right choices.
So do you see the problem as exacerbating, not actually receding?
Oh, absolutely. It's getting worse. And part of the reason is that there's so much confusion about what people should be doing. The ones that who care to even find out, but the majority of the population is just following the taillights of the person in front of them and going to the next fast food joint and, you know, getting more and more sedentary. And it's really sad to see so many people getting sicker and sicker.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, there is so much information out there. And I guess that's part of the problem, as you just pointed out, is that it's kind of confusing. But with all the information out there, it still seems to be, it's not going away. It's actually increasing. And I've actually just moved back from Japan. And what I noticed there, because I lived there 10 years ago. And since that 10 years time, I've actually noticed, like, even Japan, it's becoming a problem. And I feel like it's going to really hit them hard soon, if not already, because they don't have the level of information and knowledge that we do in America or Australia or other parts of the world as well. So now that we're aware of it, it's still a problem. But at least we are, you know, for those who want to do something about it, can be aware and can try to minimize their risk of, you know, heart disease or any of these other diseases that are related to weight and obesity.
Absolutely. I mean, it's really sad that people, you know, someone wouldn't live their full potential lifespan or have the best possible health and vitality that they could, you know, just because of these choices that they're making that are so much within their reach to make a different choice.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously you do with the preventing of it. Currently, what are the solutions to help, I suppose, kick this in the butt? Is it really sort of medication and is that what mostly doctors are prescribing to people rather than working with them to prevent further? cause?
Mostly what doctors are prescribing is medications, and that's how we're trained, right? We're
trained absolutely.
To learn to give the right prescription, make the diagnosis, and find out what the right prescription is for this, or whether it's a drug or a surgical procedure.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't, and that works fine in a situation where it's a life and death, you know, somebody's leg is about to fall off or they're bleeding. Yes, you know, you need to do an urgent surgery and you need to tell them exactly what they need to do and they better listen to you. But in these diseases, it's not something that happens, that's not a black and white urgent situation. These are chronic conditions that are gradually progressive and they require the full participation of the patient with you, which requires education and it requires empathy and love and patience and time, right? Mm-hmm. Which oftentimes we don't have that time and it's much easier to write a prescription and everybody's happy.
Here's an interesting question. And it's just out of, you know, interest of mine, I guess, but it seems not just for, you know, our health issues, but a lot of things we seem to, you know, sort of put that Band-Aid approach on life. And it seems the way this, you know, society sort of is designed and operates at the moment. And so with weight and health issues, you know, we have medication to ease it. And it's becoming better and better. So it's becoming easier, easier and more accessible by many as well. I mean, is that such a bad thing as a doctor in your own opinion? Like, with technology increasing and as the world, you know, moves forward and modernizes even more and changes come more and more rapidly, you know, why not? Why not use medication to allow us to live longer? Why not, you know, have robotic arms to replace injured body parts? Or why not, you know, challenge death, I guess, by, you know, technology and medication?
Well, that's all fine and good. And I think it's good to have as many tools in the toolbox as we need, right? But you want to use the right tool for the right problem. And, you know, I'm all about lifestyle and healthy eating and exercise and trying to treat people holistically. But, you know, I'll be the first one to say if I drop right here and have a heart attack, I want all the best modern technology that you can bring in me. Give me all the stents and the bypass surgery and all the great new medicines and robots and everything that can that is possible to save my life. But at the same time, let's not forget that humans have evolved in a certain environment over hundreds of thousands of years. And in the last century, we have just turned that upside down, whether it's the food that we're eating, whether it's the lighting that we're exposed to, whether it's the sedentariness where we're just sitting, we're not sleeping, we're working on work deadlines 24/7, we don't really have social connections, we're socially isolated, and you know, we mess with that environment at our own peril. Again, we've evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to live in a certain environment, and we can't expect that we will evolve so quickly within a century when we just turn all that upside down.
Absolutely.
You know, and we don't know, the body doesn't know how to cope with that.
Yeah, okay. And I guess that's sort of, you know, the argument that could be that, everything is changing and the way we live our lives now is changing. Now to, you know, I guess prevent and put into practice in our own daily lives a lot of our health problems, etc. It would mean changing the way we live, changing our lifestyles, and perhaps not doing all that we want to do and enjoying it as to the level that we perhaps enjoy it. So why not go down that path of saying, you know, who cares? I'm just going to eat because I know when I, you know, if it becomes a problem, you know, technology would be better and better, and I'll be able to heal through medication rather than preventive activity.
Well, but that's not true, right? And we're not talking about increasing lifespan just so we can be disabled and be crippled longer. We're talking about improving health span so we can actually enjoy all those things that technology is bringing us, that evolution is bringing us, all the latest new gadgets and toys and fun things that we can do. In order to be able to enjoy all those, we need to be healthy, right? So the idea
is I absolutely agree. But, you know, if technology does advance, and who knows what it'd be like in 20 years, what we'll have available to us to help us be healthy. But, you know, in my opinion, I think there's going to be an amazing amount of technology and medications and sources that we can go to not only really make us healthy and fit, even despite what we're eating and doing, and to extend our lives indefinitely.
Well, maybe so, but I mean, you need to be. First of all, you need to be around long enough to be able to take advantage of that.
But it might be. But, yeah, it could be just 20 years. Yeah.
Some people are arguing that the man who's going to live 200 to 200 has already been born.
Yeah, there you go. Jeez, that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah, look, I think, you know, and for me personally, my health is not the best. I'm not the best example of health, but I'm certainly in a reasonably good shape, I guess. And it's taken a lot of work and education at my own level. And, you know, speaking with people like you, I'm privileged too. And I certainly learn a lot. And certainly, you know, I want to be healthy. So when I'm 70, I can still, you know, go for a swim in the ocean and ride a bike or do all that sort of stuff, you know. I don't want to be unhealthy and crippled and not being able to move and enjoy that freedom that life sort of gives us. I'm absolutely on your side. I just wanted to sort of put that counter argument in there. So when we talk about prevention, and I guess this is a big part of your book, what are we talking about?
Well, we're really talking about going back to the core principles, right? The bottom line truths that really haven't changed that much, no matter how much controversy there might be. The fact remains that the master levers of health are, you know, what we eat, how we move, how we sleep, what sort of toxins are we exposed to from the outside, and how do we manage stress, and really how much love do we have? So you can summarize it in saying that it's about what we do with our feet, forks, and fingers. And the other three would be sleep, stress, and love.
So hang on, right? Feet, forks, and fingers.
Yeah, so the feet would be moving, right? We have evolved to be moving all the time, going from place to place looking for food. Forks is what we eat,
yep.
Right? And humans have evolved eating a diet of unprocessed foods that come from the ground, mostly plants, because you'd be much more likely to capture some plant to eat rather than capturing an animal to eat.
Yep.
And fingers would signify toxins. And one of the most toxic things that we do with our fingers is smoke. But there's other toxins that we're exposed to as well, like chemicals that are added to our food, additives, pesticides, insecticides, preservatives, coloring agents. Hmm. And I would lump alcohol and dairy in that same category as, you know, endocrine toxins. And then the other three I said were sleep, stress, and love. We're not sleeping enough. We've shortened, since the advent of the light bulb and all the wonderful devices that were created really in the last couple of decades, we're sleeping shorter and shorter times because we're either connected to work or we're connected to social media or email with our devices. We're compromising our sleep time. We're stressed because we're constantly connected to work. We've added a 13th month of work if you add up all the additional connectivity.
Hmm.
And, you know, just look at this technology. You and I are talking from, you know, across the world. And this is wonderful in the way that we're using it. But at the same time, this would mean that, you know, we could be collaborating on a project 24 hours a day and really never get any rest at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as a result, people are getting more and more socially isolated. They, you know, social isolation correlates directly with unhealthy lifestyle choices. The more socially isolated we are, the more likely we are to make self-destructive choices.
Yeah,
so this is really common sense stuff. On the one hand, we're talking about extremes in inventions and discoveries, and on the other hand, there's these universal truths that, you know, many of us are choosing to ignore.
Yeah, certainly, and I love the feet, forks, fingers. It just rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? And sleep, stress, and love. You know, they are like the fundamental needs. I've got a concept I've designed, which is called the Ultimate Life Map, and it really sort of encapsulates a lot of these too, like health, relationships, which is sort of linked to love, that social interaction that we have with other beings, and growth as well. But look, lots to probably unpack there. I'll try and be as specific as I can so we can get to some depth and value for the audience listening out there. But with these things in mind, the psychological, because they are so, you know, as you said, they're common sense sort of stuff, but it seems that even though it's common sense, we still struggle to to do it. Like, I'm still, you know, guilty of doing the wrong things for my health, even though I know what I shouldn't be doing. And I mean, that's just the conditioned pattern of my being. But do you deal with people on that level as well? You know, the psychology behind it all, and the brain, I suppose, the mind, and how it functions.
Absolutely. I mean, it all boils down to mindset, right? Yeah. I talk about physical environment, and physical environment is, you know, what do you have in your snack drawer? If you have candy bars, then you're going to go for candy bars. If you have an apple, then you'll eat that apple. That's a physical environment. But outside of that is our social environment, right? If all my buddies like to go drink beer at happy hour every evening, then that's what I'm going to do. And likely, if I'm trying, right, likely, or if I'm trying to quit smoking and all my friends are smokers, then it's going to be making it much more difficult for me to quit smoking.
Yeah.
But the third piece of that is the psychological environment, right? What sort of environment do I have in my brain if I'm taking this from an approach of, oh, poor me, I'm depriving myself, I can't have any fun anymore, my life is no good. Those are beliefs that I'm inserting into my mind, right? I would need to take those out and replace them with different beliefs saying, hey, I'm making this choice on my own accord because it's going to afford me to be able to go surfing in the Pacific Ocean when I'm 75 years old.
Yeah.
It's going to afford me to go skydiving. It's going to get me to that trip to Mount Everest that I've been planning. Yeah. And I think that's where the hidden why comes in, right? That why is different for each person. It could be, you know, dancing in your great-granddaughter's wedding. It could be, you know, taking that hike to Machu Picchu. It could be whatever it is for that person.
Hmm.
And I think once we connect with that why, the reason why somebody wants to make that change, right, then the what, where, who, when, all becomes automatic. And that's the mindset.
Absolutely. I think when you do connect with that inner motivation, you know, the reason, the purpose, the meaning of your life, certainly that helps you. You know, change those patterns that are so embedded in us and how we operate. But it still takes a lot of work and time, yeah?
It does take work and time, and absolutely. And it's hard work. And you know, most of us are afraid to really dig into that because sometimes it can be uncomfortable to bring up, you know, past hurts or past grudges or grievances that we might have against someone or even ourselves, and it takes that digging up of old wounds and issues and healing them to really, you know, move forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's it. I mean, you just got to keep going and keep pushing yourself, and I think that's just life in general. There's a great quote I heard Tim Ferriss say on a podcast, which I loved. One of his mentors told him, it said, easy decisions, hard life, hard decisions, easy life. And I think
so true.
That comes down to what this topic as well, isn't it?
Indeed. And Tim Ferriss is fantastic. He's brought on some really good guests, and I enjoy his podcast very much too.
So,
like you.
Yeah, thank you. Like a lot of these things, he's got an amazing following, an amazing podcast, and unbelievable guests, like me as well. But to, you know, celebrity status now these days, I think. But
Well, you do a pretty good job.
Not quite there yet. what I was going to say is, I've just lost my train of thought. Thank you, Tim Ferriss.
Sorry.
That's all right.
You're saying tough decisions, easy life, easy decisions, tough life. Then it's all mindset.
Yeah. So, I mean, about the mindset and the changes, but even then, I mean, we still revert because we're designed by, you know, pleasure and reward, aren't we, as human beings fundamentally? And I don't know, as we've evolved and we've improved the way of our life, regardless of what people think, I mean, our life has come a long way, especially in the last 100 years, what's available to us, how we can live our lives. There's more and more of these pleasures and rewards available to us. And that's probably not helping, is it?
Well, again, it's that mindset, right? So, yes, I'm going to have an immediate reward if I, you know, have that ice cream, or if I smoke a joint, I'm going to have that immediate reward for the next, whatever, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, 1 hour.
Hmm.
But in the long term, I'm going to be deprived of some much better rewards that I could have in the future, right? So it's the difference between immediate gratification and that pleasure that you're going to get versus delayed gratification for a much bigger pleasure if I have the patience and the ability to, if you want to think about it as suffering, I won't think about it as suffering. But if you have that deprivation mindset and say, okay, I'm depriving myself of, you know, the pleasure that I could have right now in buying that Ferrari so that I can save money and maybe buy a Rolls Royce in a few years.
Yeah. But I guess it comes down to the moment and the now, than something in the future, which does not yet exist and may never exist as well. So, you know, I mean, buying that Ferrari, yeah, why not? No, in 3 years' time, you may not be here to buy that bloody the watch or whatever you want
to. Right. Again, so that comes back to the mindset or the hidden why, right? So yeah. If my why is to have the Rolls Royce, then I'm going to wait for my Rolls Royce. I don't care about the Ferrari right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think some of these, I mean, I think there's a lot more of these pleasures and rewards available to us, and we seem to be surrounded by it, you know, with social media information and stuff like that. Do you agree with that? Do you think there is more abundance of this sort of stuff happening and a greater influence in our lives?
Oh, without a doubt. There's temptations everywhere. I mean, you could get on the internet to look for one. You know, before you know it, your phone pings and there's a notification from Facebook that has something, and you're onto a completely different rabbit hole and forgot even where you started. And,
yes.
You know, we're similarly in the food landscape, we've been bombarded with hyper palatable foods that are loaded with salt, sugar, and oil to make them addictive, right?
Yeah.
And so yes, you're going to get that immediate reward, and the reward centers in the brain light up. I mean, these companies spend billions of dollars to research neurochemicals and see how we can design the best potato chip or the best sauce for these French fries that is just going to make it so you keep craving it and you can't stop eating them. I mean, that's yeah. their whole business.
It's like and KFC and McDonald's with the burgers and the chicken.
Without a doubt. And you talked about Japan earlier, right? Japan used to be known for longevity, and now you look around Tokyo and all you see is fast food joints everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was talking to somebody who came back from Cuba just today, and they were saying that, you know, the people look, even they don't look that fat and sick like they do in the westernized world, but you also don't see any fast food in Cuba yet.
Yeah. And then I guess the alternatives are there, you know, like as regardless of the increasing amount of influences in our lives and the temptations for all those quick fixes and pleasures and rewards, the alternatives are there as well. And, you know, certainly as it comes to diet, we know that. So, look, I want to talk to you about diet and get your input there. But how do we go about, you know, again, once we connect with the why, there's a reason why we want to, you know, do the right things and make the right choices than not. How do we then, you know, make it easier for us to do that?
Well, we really have to, once we connect with the why and we know we need to get from here, from point A to point B, this is the direction that I need to go in. And it would make sense then for me to set up my environment, to automate the environment so that I can sort of make the default settings automatic so that I go in the direction that I'm wanting to go in, right? So once you get that psychological buy-in, now you have to work on fixing the environment, right? So you set up the environmental factors, you take out the trash, whether it's in your snack drawer, your office, or your kitchen pantry, your refrigerator, you take out the trash so it's not even there to tempt you,
yeah.
And instead put in the food that you want to be eating. You know, if it's an exercise habit that you're trying to build up, I mean, I've got friends that will actually throw their running shoes in the sink the night before, right? So they have to, when they wake up at 5:30 in the morning rubbing their eyes and they want to go brush their teeth, they can't even brush their teeth until they see the running shoes and the running shorts in the sink, which they have to take it out or you put it in the car the night before.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of automating. It's a matter of setting defaults. It's a matter of, you know, starting small and piggybacking on existing habits that you already have, right? If you're trying to remember to, you're trying to do push-ups, you try to, you know, you make it a habit to do 5 push-ups every time you go to the bathroom. And
yeah.
Before you know it, you'll be doing 10 and 15 and 20. So you build on something small, start wherever you are, and start from these micro habits into macro quotas doing more and more. But it does take, I mean, the first step is the awareness of knowing, hey, I'm in an environment that's set up to help to cause me to get fat and unhealthy and to fail. and I'm aware of those pitfalls, so I'm going to plan my route to go a different way so that I can pick up the things that I need to pick up.
Yeah, okay.
Rather than being at someone's mercy.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot more in that we could unpack. But, you know, it's a lot of stuff that people know already. But I'm glad you touched on awareness, because earlier you talked about, you know, the physical environment and understanding that and being aware of that and the temptations that exist there. And, you know, cleaning it up is a great way to do it. But you also talk about the psychological environment too. And, you know, cleaning that up as well is really important. And one of the best ways I've found in my life, and I know a lot of other people do too, is through some sort of mindfulness practice. Is that something that you recommend as well?
Absolutely. So taking some time to be quiet is so critical, right? So it shuts out the outside noise. If you can just sit down and shut off those outside stimuli and just check in with what's going on for yourself, all the answers are within. Yeah, even a short time, even if it's, you know, it doesn't have to be an hour, it could be 20 minutes, it could be 10 minutes, it could be 5 minutes of just sitting and noticing, doing something as simple as noticing the breath, right? You can, mindfulness in day-to-day practice would be common things like, okay, I don't want to listen to the news or the radio when I'm driving. I just want to sit there and be by myself and sort of take inventory of my own being, right? Yeah. Rather than chasing after something outside all the time. And that makes such a huge difference.
Is there any power. Type of mindfulness practice or meditation practice that you prefer or choose yourself?
I prefer just connecting with the breath. I think that's the simplest one. It's secular. It's available to everyone. It's something that you can do wherever you go. Your breath goes with you wherever you are. And so just taking a pause to check in with my own breath for just a few minutes at a time.
So how do you incorporate that in your day? Like, is there a specific time of the day you sort of do that, or do you just do it throughout the day?
Well, I try to do a few minutes in the morning before I start my day, and I certainly try to do a few minutes before I go to bed. But, you know, oftentimes in between patients, so I'm seeing patients all day, I'm running from room to room, and I'll take a pause and just, you know, count 10 breaths, just count down 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Especially, you know, you most need to do this when you feel like you don't have the time to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So, especially when you're feeling rushed and overwhelmed and everything is going nuts and you don't have time, that's when you need to do it.
Yeah, actually, Tim Ferriss, going back to Tim, thank you. He says that, you know, in one of his ages ago, he said, you know, for those of you who don't meditate and don't think you have enough time to meditate, that's probably the people that need to do more of it. And it's pretty true. I actually find too, once you sort of get into that mindfulness practice, I like you, I don't sort of do it every stage throughout the day. I sort of do it in the morning and then I try to do it in the evening. But just that morning practice has really helped me sort of be a little bit more aware and conscious during the day. So like, for example, and this is one that's really at the top of mind at the moment, I go for the swim in the ocean in my lunch break, and then I get into the car and drive back to the office, and as I get out of the car, I have my phone in my hand, and I'm always tempted to just pick it up and look at the phone, but now I'm actually consciously going, no, put it in my pocket and let's just walk back and enjoy the walk back to the office. And you know, that's taken a while, but most people would pick up their phone, they'll be on their phone walking and you know, being distracted and constantly, you know, I guess entertaining the mind rather than just letting it sort of breathe and rest.
Oh, it's so amusing. You can go to the park on a beautiful day and you hear the sound of kids laughing, running around and playing on the swings. And then you look around on the benches and their parents are sitting and every single one of them is staring into the little screen in their hand.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm guilty. I've been there. Yep. It's ridiculous, isn't it? But again, that comes through, you know, greater awareness, and then you can start looking at these things and going, hang on, is this really that necessary? And I think that comes really from any sort of mindfulness or meditation practice, a greater state of awareness. And that's really essential for the subject that you're talking about, obviously. So once you become more aware, you're more conscious, you actually do start to think about, you know, your behaviors and what you're doing to yourself. Even though you might not be perfect, you know, it slowly builds and improves. And certainly I'm a testament to that, from where I've been and where I am now and to where I'm going, I guess. I really believe in it. So I want to talk to you quickly. We've got to wrap up the show soon, but I want to talk to you about diet and nutrition and what your thoughts are on that. And what is the ideal? Because there's so much confusion, as you said earlier, around, you know, what's good health and what does it look like? And, you know, from paleo diets to just eat meat and blah, blah, blah. And then there's obviously vegan diets and everything else in between. What is right and what is wrong, in your opinion?
Yeah, so the way that I like to approach things is from an evolutionary biology standpoint, right? So whenever there's any question or any confusion about any of this stuff, all you have to do is take a pause and think about, okay, how have we evolved and how have humans lived on the planet for hundreds of thousands of years? And the truth becomes very, very clear. And then you look at the most popular diets too. So you can look at sort of an ancestral type of diet, the Mediterranean diet, and a plant-based or vegan diet. Those three are probably the ones that are the most talked about. Lately, ketogenic seems to be really popular. But you know, if you look at what all of them have in common, it would be eating vegetables, unprocessed plants, right? Some fruit. Okay, if you're hardcore keto, then you're counting calories from carbohydrates, so not that much fruit. But in general, a diet that's high in fresh vegetables, some fruit, some nuts and seeds, that's in common with all of these, yeah, all of these diets. Hmm. And then, you know, you can go down the spectrum and you're probably not going to get enough calories if you're just eating a bunch of vegetables and some nuts and seeds and a little bit of fruit. So what are you going to add to that? You could either add some animal food, like eggs and chicken and fish, or you could go down the plant side and you would add some beans and root vegetables, you know, more of the unprocessed carbohydrates.
Yeah.
The advantage that you're going to get on the plant side is that you're getting all these phytonutrients. You're getting plant nutrients that help fight disease, that help boost your immunity. There's minerals and vitamins that are coming from the earth. And on the animal side, you're getting more calories, but you're really not getting any of that benefit. Or the fiber that your gut bacteria need to thrive and keep you healthy. So, you know, from a biochemical standpoint, it makes sense to eat more on the plant side, to eat a diet that's what I would call a nutrient-dense, plant-rich diet, or a whole foods plant-based diet. And if you want to have a little bit of animal food in there as a sprinkling, you think about it as a condiment for taste and texture, that's okay. Mm. But primarily, it should be a nutrient-dense, plant-rich diet. From a biochemical standpoint, that makes sense. Now you take a look at that from evolutionary biology, and you think about our ancestors who, before the advent of agriculture 10,000 years ago, we humans were roaming from place to place searching for food. And you think about it, we're not very good hunters, right? We're not that good at capturing. If you put me and a rabbit in a park somewhere and I'm supposed to catch that rabbit and kill it without any weapons, without a gun, I'm going to be chasing that rabbit for the whole month and probably not be able to catch it. I'll be much more likely to find some strawberries or, you know, an apple hanging from a tree or something like that, than to kill an animal. So it's from an evolutionary standpoint, too, it makes a lot more sense that humans were gatherer-hunters rather than hunter-gatherers.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
So any way you look at it, a nutrient-dense, plant-rich diet makes the most sense from an evolutionary standpoint as well as from a biochemistry standpoint.
Yeah, okay, and I like that, and it certainly makes a lot of sense to me. I've sort of gone down the road of a more vegan way of life, and, you know, I still do eat animal products, not nearly as much as I used to, so it's mostly, you know, plants, but occasionally there's meat served up, and then I will eat it, and very rarely, sometimes dairy as well, but I try to stick clear of those things as best as I can. Possibly can, and that's just by, you know, controlling my environment, like you've suggested already, and that certainly has made a big difference in my way of life, and to the point where I've got a lot more energy to move as well, and then that helps, you know, the whole movement thing makes me want to do.
Well, that's the key. So you feel better, you feel more energetic, you sleep better, you digest food better, you poop better,
yeah,
right? Your aches and pains go away, your migraines go away, your joint pains go away. Or if somebody has uncontrolled diabetes or high blood sugars, those are better. The blood pressure goes down. I mean, I can just go on and on and on. It makes such a difference. So if your listeners tried for themselves for a month or 2 or 3 months, that's the best way to do it. I mean, your listeners are smart people that like to experiment and they want to be effective and successful and have a good life. So try it out and see what you feel, and you can make your own decision.
Absolutely. And that's, I think that's like everything in life. You just got to experiment with things and try it out for yourself and you know, observe how it feels to you. And certainly that's what I experienced. And I think I had the same advice, you know, just try it for a month and see how you feel. And, you know, we dabbled with it and I kept, you know, serving my family normal food and I'd cook up my own special food. And slowly they've just come on board because I was the cook. And now that we're back here, my wife's doing a lot of the cooking. And, yeah, she does meals with plants every night and that's about it. Occasionally there'll be fish on the table, but yeah, very rarely. So it's interesting. It does help. So is that then sort of just wrapping this up? Does that lead us to, you know, turbo metabolism just by eating the right foods?
Well, eating the right foods is a huge part of it, and moving the body the way it's built to be moved is a big part of it. Sleep is huge. Sleep is a huge, huge factor, and that's probably the most ignored master lever of health.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about stress and social connections and eliminating toxins. And so, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but food is the biggest one. And we can talk about meal timing and meal frequency too. It's the food choices, but also, you know, how often you're eating, what times you're eating, all those things affect your metabolism.
Okay. How often do you recommend eating?
So what the latest research is showing, and this is contrary to what we used to advise people, you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. You should be eating 3 meals, 3 snacks. You're eating 6 times a day. And what the research now is showing that actually a wider frequency, wider gap between meals is actually much more beneficial. And when you are in the non-fed state, that's when the insulin levels go down and the body will actually burn fat in the fasting state. If we're constantly in the fed state, the body never gets really a chance to get to burning the stored fuel, which is stored as fat. And again, you look at that from an evolutionary standpoint, humans that were hunter-gatherers or gatherer-hunters, whatever term you want to use, would have had to go for long periods of time without food. They weren't, you know, going from fast food joint to fast food joint. Yeah. They were probably hungrily looking for something to eat for long periods of time, and our body has a mechanism in place. We're much more better adapted to alternating being in the fed state to being in the non-fed state rather than being in the fed state all the time, which is what we do now.
And it's sort of unnecessary. And I realize that as I've sort of changed my daily schedule, I started eating lunches again. Whereas typically in Japan, I was just eating the breakfast and then sort of snacking on nuts and maybe a bit of fruit during the day. And then, you know, a meal earlier in the afternoon. Which was my dinner, and then I'd have that sort of 12 to 16 hour sort of fast in between those meals. But now I'm sort of eating those 3 meals again. I'm just like yesterday, it's sort of unnecessary. You don't need it.
Yes, especially eating late at night and then going to bed at night. I mean, you lived in Japan, you know how the sumo wrestlers eat, right? They get fed and then they sleep and they eat and exercise and sleep. And especially eating that late meal right before bed, that's when insulin levels are going to rise and all that stored fuel is going to get captured as fat in the body, and that's how these guys get so big and heavy.
Obviously, you know, affecting your sleep then as well.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Look, well, I'm sure there's a lot more information in the book. So guys, go check it out. I'll stick the link in the show notes. So if you'd like to support the show, you can certainly get a copy there. So it is called Turbo Metabolism. I will not repeat the subtitle, but it will be linked in the show notes. So do have a look at that and support Dr. Vidge with his book launch. Now, Dr. Vidge, I've got a few questions that I ask all guests on the show, so I just want to run through these. They're sort of a rapid round bunch of questions, so see how well you go. First question is, do you have any routines or rituals that you believe contribute to your success?
Yeah, they're really simple ones. I like to take a walk after dinner for about 20 minutes. I dim the lights before I go to bed, and I put my devices to bed 2 hours before my own bedtime so I can get a good night's sleep.
Excellent. 2 hours before. Yeah. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Probably that you need to accept others the way they are and don't try to change everybody else, because the only person you can really change is yourself. And if you change yourself and become the best version that you can be of you, everybody and everything else will fall into place.
Yeah. How would you define success, or what does success look like to you?
To me, success looks like filling all your buckets. So don't focus just on one bucket, right? We have the bucket of money and family and personal health and friends and sleep and exercise. And so try to fill all the buckets a little bit so that they're all filling up simultaneously. Prioritize and balance rather than just focusing on one thing and then neglecting everything else.
And that's interesting because you raised a question I did want to ask you in regards to balance. What are your thoughts on balance? Like, I mean, is an ice cream on the weekend okay? Is smoking a joint, you know, from time to time okay? Is having, you know, a round of beers with your mates and a night out okay? You know, what does balance look like, and is there such a thing?
You know, we talked about love and social connections, and, you know, if we're having a celebratory meal or an ice cream or whatever it is that gives you joy and pleasure and connection with your friends, and you're doing that as a celebration occasionally, I think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Just don't get into doing the celebration every day, right? So I think it's perfectly fine to take a break and break the rules. You don't, and then you can follow the rules a lot better if you know that you can break them once in a while.
Yeah, okay. So again, it's about having that discipline there, isn't it?
It is, and as long as you know who's in charge, right? You're in charge, you're in control. It's perfectly fine to break the rules once in a while. It makes life a lot more fun.
Yeah, because I think, you know, again, evolutionary, going back to that, you know, we may have eaten a lot of plants, et cetera, but we also did have, you know, gatherings, and we'd have, you know, there's certain tribes that have, you know, certain plants that they eat to, I guess, go out of the world. And, you know, there's a fair bit of that, you know, smoking tobacco and pipe and pot, that's sort of always been there, and then eating that animal that they caught every now and then, you know, and that was all balanced too. Yeah,
indeed. I mean, if it's a celebration, that's perfectly fine. Just know that some of those habits can be addictive, and don't get caught in the trap of, you know, getting hooked.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. What is one tool, skill, or resource that has helped improve your effectiveness or productivity?
Probably breaking things down into bite-sized pieces. And we talked about that a little bit with habit change too. So let's, you know, we're trying to move a mountain. You know, you break it into bite-sized pieces. It's the old joke about how do you eat an elephant, right?
Yeah.
One bite at a time.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So you break down the task and you chip away at it gradually, because you look at things that look sort of unfathomable. But when you break them down into bite-sized pieces, you know, we can accomplish a lot.
Yeah, great one. What advice would you give someone that is needing or wanting to make a change in their life?
Well, this comes up every day for me when I'm working with my patients. And it's really, my message is start where you are, right? You don't have to be perfect. You just have to start.
Yeah.
And small steps, and just, again, chunk the task into bite-sized pieces. You know, just start with making one small change. And then you can add more to it as you get more successful, things become easier too. But you have to start somewhere. So start where you are and just break it down into things that you can manage right now. And before you know it, you're going to be a master.
Yeah, cool. I like that. If you were to be served your last meal, what would you request?
Oh, that's a tough one. probably some kind of Mediterranean food, probably like a nice Mediterranean salad with olive oil and a little bit of, you know, nice bread. That's what I can think of off the top of my head. I like Middle Eastern and Mediterranean food a lot.
Okay, cool. And what activity?
Or sushi. I like sushi too.
Oh, sushi's awesome. I miss it. What activity gives you the greatest sense of joy?
Probably being outdoors. Hiking, riding my bicycle, listening to a good piece of music, or just trying to strum a tune on my guitar.
Yeah, great.
Those are good outlets.
If you could pick one book to pass down to your children or future generations, what would it be?
Wow, that's a tough one. Maybe Turbo Metabolism. No, I really like The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand. I think that was quite a masterpiece. Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse is a beautiful book, classic. Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl. Those are some examples that come to mind.
Okay, excellent. I'll stick those books in the show notes, guys, so pick it up, support the show. And, of course, Dr. Vidge's book will be in there as well, Turbo Metabolism. So check it out at thehiddenwhy.com. What quote, phrase, or message would you text or tweet to everyone in the world?
Well, that changes from time to time, right? Yeah. A simple one would be here now. Be here now. It's just three words, right? Because we're always running after other things. Now is a good one. Another one that I really like, and it's been attributed to Shakespeare and Pablo Picasso and many other people, so I'm not sure who it's from, is that the purpose of life is to discover your gift, and the meaning of life is in giving it away.
Okay, I like it. And do you believe we all have a hidden why, a purpose?
We all have a purpose. We just have to find it. We have that hidden why. And again, the trick is to find it. And, you know, we all have something to grow. We grow with contributing to others. We have something to contribute to the world. And when you can find that thing, it's the most amazing feeling in the world.
Do you think we find it, or do you think we actually just create it?
I think we find it. I think it's already there. We don't create it. I think it's already there. But it might feel like we're creating it because we're unraveling layers and layers of other things that might be hiding it and covering it. So we feel like we created it, but it was already there. We find it.
Okay. And what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
Living life with passion and purpose to me would mean when what I think, what I say, and what I do are all in alignment. When I'm living with integrity to and then fulfilling my highest values.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. It's such a hard, not a hard thing to master. It just, again, takes that awareness, I think. But once you really start living with that integrity, it really does lead to a greater sense of fulfillment and purpose and meaning in life, I think. And I've got many examples. But that's a great one. I like that. Last question I want to ask you is, what do you believe is the underlying motivation behind everything you do?
The underlying motivation behind everything I do, and again, that changes from what stage of life you're in. So I'm assuming you're asking about right now.
Now in this moment of your life. What motivates this, you? Actually, I think it's at every moment. But
Right, but when you're 18, you just want to, you know, your motivation is to be with hot, pretty girls, and when you're 35, it might be to make more money. Right.
Yeah, but what's the underlying motivation behind those? Because I think there's probably a common link, and I don't want to trigger the question, but whether it's chasing hot girls or chasing money or chasing cars or chasing, you know, playing with your kids, whatever it might be, you know, why are they the motivating factors? What's the purpose of
that? Well, because we all want to have beautiful experiences and, you know, hang out with beautiful people and see beautiful places. But the highest motivation would probably be, at least for me right now, the need to grow and contribute, to learn and to be able to give back and, you know, contribute something that will stay alive for long after I'm gone.
Okay. Why is that important?
Because we're here for a short time. We're all here for such a finite, short amount of time, and you want to make the biggest splash, the biggest impact that you can in that short amount of time, in a good way, to try to make a good impact and influence as many people as you can with something positive that can make their lives better, more productive, more successful.
And I love that. I think, you know, contribution is a big part of it. But if I can ask again, why is that important to you? Why? I mean, you know, once you're gone, you're gone. And yes, you might have had an impact while you're here. But, you know, like the greatest rulers and leaders of the past, we don't think about them in the day. So why is that sense of contribution so important to you?
Well, I guess at some level we want to be immortal. We want to have some sort of permanence. And knowing that we're impermanent, our message or our influence could be something that stays around, you know, for a long, long time. And you think about the greatest leaders, like you said, you know, I would argue that they're not forgotten, that they're the things that they left us with, the teachings, the lessons, the message is still alive. And that's why, you know, 99% of us still want to do the right thing, even when nobody's watching, right? Mm. Because there's some message of morality, of right and wrong, about the goodness of other human beings.
Yeah.
That stays with all of us.
Yeah. Nicely answered. Really, really good answers and a really good conversation. I appreciate you coming on today, Dr. Vij. I'd like to just encourage people to reach out and connect with you. How is the best way to connect with you?
Thank you, Lee. It's been a pleasure. Yeah, so the best way to connect with me would be at drvij.com, drvij.com. And check out my new book. And I'd love to connect with your listeners and hang out with you some more, Lee.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And thank you. Guys, I'll stick all the links in the show notes. So do connect and say good day and thank him for coming on the show. Make sure you check out the book as well. So all the links and et cetera will be in the show notes. Great to have you here with me today, Dr. Vij. And you guys out there listening, thank you as well for tuning in. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. Speak soon.
Cheers.
Thanks, guys, for listening to this episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard. I hope you love what you're hearing. If you like this episode, guys, or any of the episodes that you're listening to here at The Hidden Why, please do me a favor by sharing it. You can share it with your families. You can share it with your loved ones. You can do that by using your favorite social media channels, using the icons on the platform that you're listening to The Hidden Why podcast. Also, guys, if you're a fan of the show, please connect with me. Connect with me at thehiddenwhy.com. I love to hear from you. I love to converse with the people that listen to this show to find out what they enjoy, what they don't enjoy, and perhaps if they have any questions or feedback for the show as well. You can stay up to date with all that I'm releasing here, guys. I do a solo show every Monday, a 3-minute thought every Thursday. I do 2 interviews a week on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and a book review every Friday. You can stay up to date with all that by subscribing to my newsletter at thehiddenwhy.com. Just enter your email address there, and also subscribing to the podcast on the platform that you choose to listen to your podcast. You can also support the show, guys, by using the Amazon links at thehiddenwhy.com. So if you like books, you can get all the books that I review there and anything else, really, that you like to purchase through Amazon. So use that link and help support the show. And we've also got a deal with Audible, guys. Audible is a fantastic way to listen to all your favorite books. We've got a deal with them so you can get 2 free books when you subscribe subscribe to a 30-day free trial. So check that out, again, at thehiddenwhy.com. Guys, that's it from me. You know what to do. Go out there, breathe more passion into every single moment. Do everything with greater purpose, and in doing so, you will discover your hidden why. This is The Hidden Why. My name is Lee Martinuzzi. Until next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon.